Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast, half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Longdrich. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
Pretty good. Dive bars on the mind, I have to say, after reading your recent story.
I always have dive bars on the mind. But yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, you kind of tap into it in the beginning of that story, but often dive bars are kind of written off, right? It's kind of they don't get the due that they really deserve as being a true American drinking, you know, establishment and one that's historic and important.
Yeah, people kind of take them for granted until they close and right. Then, you know, they assume they're always going to be dive somewhere. Right. And, you know, if you say dive to an American, we all think of kind of a very specific thing. You know, yeah. It's the place that's poorly maintained with a little bit dirty maybe, but always has like good music playing and
or I like to think of it kind of like worn in,
you know, worn in.
And I think that that's part of the problem is that as time went on, dives kind of had this connotation. They were run down or
turns out they always have been.
Maybe that's true.
You know, yeah, that's true. But there's dives and there are dives. It's a broad term and it encompasses everything from like the biker bar where you will get killed.
To like the New York Irish bar.
Yeah,
you know, that
exactly.
Could be fastidiously clean. It's a very personal term because I think Everybody defines what a dive bar is almost individually.
Like, well, it's one of those I know when I see it. But, you know, like in New York, for instance, not every Irish bar
is a dive. No.
I mean, I was at one Neary's up on 57th Street, Second Avenue.
Yeah.
That place is not a dive.
Right.
It's very fancy inside.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hospitable,
yeah.
But it's not a dive.
Yeah, or like Dublin House, like, is on the borderline, you know. And I think sometimes it also depends upon who you're drinking at the bar with.
That's
you know
true
what I mean?
Too. Like, but I think the thing about a dive, if I had to press to come up with a definition, I would say that the dive is the kind of bar you go to where nobody judges you.
Right.
You know, it's a judgment-free zone. You can be yourself, do whatever you want, but you don't get to judge the other people in there either.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because you don't get to come off and be fancy.
Yeah.
I was at Hank's, my recently closed local dive in Brooklyn. My wife and I were there with another couple. And before sitting down on the bar stool, the woman took out her handkerchief and put it on the stool.
Right.
And okay, that's not a dive bar person.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for disguising me in the story, Dave. It was me. I took out my handkerchief and I put it down.
You put it,
I'm sorry to say, but it was me. That idea of like the Bukowski, you know, like L.A. dive.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think if you walked in, I never had the pleasure, displeasure of drinking with Bukowski, but
neither,
the famous writer and
I've been to some of his bars though.
But even if he went into a nice bar, I think it would suddenly become like a dive bar just given
just his, around him. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
and some people like that's, you know, it depends sort of like who you drink with. Like,
well, they're called degenerate alcoholics.
I wasn't gonna say it. It was on my tongue, but I didn't want to say it. You know, it's an array of people. During the time of day, they can be different things for different people.
Right.
And like they serve, you know, kind of like a pub as a community. And
it's
you know.
Always people from all walks of life. Real dive bars, as far as I know, strangers are usually okay.
Yeah.
It's not a neighborhood bar.
Right.
You know, it's a place you can come in as long as you know how to behave.
Right.
And that behaving means you don't get to come in with your bullshit and put it off on everybody else. You got to check that at the door.
Right.
And that goes back, it turns out, as far as I can tell, to African-American bars in the 19th century, where they were run by African-Americans for African-Americans. They were rough places. You know, they had all kinds of illegalities going on, prostitution, gambling, all the things that happened.
Many bars at the time.
That many bars had, exactly. These were all concentrated in one, but they also had great music.
Right.
And they also had significant numbers of white people drinking in them, which is interesting. Those white people could not come in and throw their racist bullshit down.
Right.
They had to be willing to put their social privilege aside. And if they put it aside, they were welcome.
Right.
And those, they created these communities that you read about. The coverage of these communities is always hostile.
Yeah.
But then you read between the lines and you say, hey, you know, that sounds like a pretty good bar.
Right.
Everybody's sitting around the table playing cards and they've got some drinks. And
quite a revolutionary idea for the 1860s.
I mean,
the Civil War was literally just finished.
People didn't really mix like that anywhere.
Right.
Except at these the lowest level of society, and also physically low. These places were usually in basements.
Right.
So, you know.
And even the term dive, I mean, what I loved about your piece was that it went through the etymology, you know, digging back through layer and layer. And people have been trying to define what a dive bar is for over a century at this point. And a lot of the definitions are really weird and not
helpful.
Not helpful at all.
Not kind also.
And I would say that your research, you know, led back to Buffalo of all places.
Right.
As the home of the original dive bar.
Which... There was one bar. Darren Wang in a Twitter conversation a year ago said that, you know, there was a really early dive there. And I looked into it and I saw there was a claim that Buffalo was the home of the dive.
Right.
And I didn't believe
it. They only claimed to be home of the, you know,
the chicken Buffalo
wing.
Chicken wing, which, more or less.
But that has an interesting and similar history
exactly,
as well. Where
exactly.
We had a piece a couple of years ago where it turns out that most likely this was something developed by African-American cooks that was then taken and popularized, you know, throughout Buffalo.
And then from Buffalo to the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew?
That Buffalo is this like amazing conduit of.
Well, it's a crossroads, you know, and it used to be a really important one because it was the end of the Erie Canal. And so it needed thousands of workers to move like grain and goods from the Midwest into canal barges so they could go down the canal to the Hudson and then down to New York and out to the world. So there were always lots of workers there. And this one bar was down on the towpath next to the canal. And to get there, you had to basically dive down a flight of stairs. It was very rickety and steep. And the thing was in the basement and it was like practically underwater. You know, its level was so low.
Which is probably where the term dive bar comes from, right? The fact that this bar was.
And it was called Doug's Dive.
Right. Subterranean.
Was. And it was like. This is, you know, where you dive to get to Doug's. And
I thought that was kind of also a fascinating thing is that the term dive starts out as like a verb, right?
Yeah.
Like to dive.
Yeah, to dive. And then it eventually becomes a place.
Right.
And I think Doug's is where it made that
jump.
That jump. It wasn't a big jump at that point.
Yeah. And then maybe like it takes a detour to Diving Bell, possibly.
Yeah.
Which would have been like kind of au courant, you know.
Yeah,
at the
that
time,
was common like slang because
diving and diving bells was so cutting edge at the time. And
they were using this technology to like, you know, dig underwater bridge foundations and all kinds of stuff. They made a lot of use of diving bells.
Caissons building for like the Brooklyn Bridge and stuff.
Exactly.
And,
so. You know. The Diving Bell was well known, and that was like up-to-date, you know, infrastructure equipment.
And maybe it's one of these things, I mean, we see this a lot of times with drinks and drinks history, is that it may come from two different sources, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like it's, you know, we're pulling from the term to dive and then also the Diving Bell, and that sort of comes together in, you know, a perfect storm, and suddenly you get...
Yeah, and it comes together somewhere where we don't see it coming together, as is often the case.
And it's funny because in New York, you still have several dive bars, like in their name, that are decorated with diving helmets and stuff. And that's
they thought that was kind of a fun, decor and a reference to the term.
But I never, I just thought that was somebody being like silly. I never really thought that there was any.
There is at least an etymological link there, you know. This term gets adopted nationwide. I mean, it starts in Buffalo in the 1850s, and by the 1870s, it's everywhere. And it became just like any kind of rough bar, usually African-American, but it spread to the white community.
Right.
Doesn't really become the modern dive bar until the Beatniks got a hold of it in the 50s, which is interesting because they started going to these like rough joints, and they were a new class of people.
Yeah.
They were much more middle class than anybody who'd hung out in dives before that. And they sort of cleaned the places up right. a little bit.
Romanticized.
Yeah. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I've been to plenty of non-romantic dive bars that are just rough as hell.
Right. Well, there's something about dive bars that always seems to attract bikers, you know, your local degenerates, art students, architects, you know, any creative
It's a mix. It's always
writers, you know.
That's the beatnik influences to get the bohemians in there.
Absolutely.
Because before that, it wasn't bohemians as much as it was like sporting life types.
Right.
So gamblers and, you know, crooks. There were pimps. Yeah. There were also just working guys.
Right.
Who liked the music and liked the company.
Or cheap beer.
And there were also, there were also bored white factory girls going in there to meet men. What a shock.
Right.
You know, but it turns out people had sex in the 19th century as well.
Right.
And
who knew?
Who knew? I know. It came as a surprise to us all.
Now it seems you have two types of bars, right? At least in New York, for the most part, you have fancy cocktail bars, you know, run by many of our friends and acquaintances. And then, you know, you have the more quotidian, everyday, you know, kind of dive bar and the dive bar almost encapsulates this.
Yeah. I think there's also a level in between of just kind of.
That's true.
I would call them like friends bars
because
it always looks like an episode of Friends when you walk in.
Yeah.
They're just kind of – they're not divey. They're not fancy either. They're just kind of everyday.
And they kind of morph with different drinking trends.
So exactly. Like, they become one thing or another.
Right.
Yeah. And there's just that vast middle.
All right. So let's say so three. But like it's almost like real estate. I feel like the term dive has been taken by – real estate brokers to cover basically every bar that's not a fancy bar.
Yeah, some people use it like that for sure.
Like just anything that doesn't, you know, where you're not going to go in and order, you know, martini.
But I think there are actual places that are dives.
Yeah.
That are different. And like Hank's that just closed.
Yeah.
That was a dive.
That was a dive.
It was poorly maintained, unsanitary. And that's very different from what you get at like the mid-level bars.
And then, you know, sadly, there are the fake dives, which I think are really funny that are.
Those are pathetic.
Right. Bars, you know, where somebody's opened it to be like a trendy dive. Like, you know, they're. It's like a Disney.
You can't open a dive.
Right.
You can become a dive.
Right.
You know, I always say it takes generations of deferred maintenance and bad choices, bad business choices to make a dive. Also, you know, it helps when you've got bad neighborhoods, low rents. You can that means you can have cheap drinks.
Yeah.
And that means you get a wide range of people.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, when I moved in 1986, all the bars around me were dives.
Yeah.
And they were some pretty righteous bars. There was the famous O'Connor's, which was became a sort of a literary hangout. That place was all sure there were some young editors in there. There was also men and women who worked at the post office. There were iron workers in there and electricians. There were definitely a couple drug dealers who used to hang out there and a couple pimps as well.
Right.
There was all kinds of people in there, you know. And
everybody gets thirsty.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to say I don't associate with you.
Right.
You know, you have to leave.
Right.
They don't have to leave.
Right.
You can't throw people out if you're a customer.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You think the dive bar is in decline now?
I think dive bars, ones, are closing at an absolutely terrifying rate.
That's what I was afraid that you were going to say.
Yeah, I mean, you see them. God, Shelby's in Denver was the last like real person bar in downtown Denver that just closed. Hank's in Brooklyn. There are lots that have closed. The Drinking Fountain, one of the greatest names in dive bars ever,
for sure.
In Jamaica Plain, south of Boston. That was an immortal dive and really a little bit, maybe a little too sketchy for a lot of people I know.
But
also very fun.
Yeah.
That place closed,
yeah.
you know, and these are places that had been, they were all built during the decline of American cities.
Yeah.
You know, they were opened when real estate was cheap. And now that cities are coming back, the dives are going.
Say the old Miami bar in Detroit, you and I were there a couple of years ago, and that's a fun, you know, Army veteran, you know,
that's a rock serious and roll dive, bar. But
you know, it's, like, you know,
it's less divey than it used to be.
That Venn diagram of, you know, rock musicians and veterans, that sort of is the perfect combination. But yeah, I mean, that whole neighborhood where it is.
Yeah, the Cass Corridor was, it was, when that place opened, that neighborhood was terrifying and was just basically crime, drugs, and, you know, and prostitution, and now it's full of new construction, and so many dives have closed in New York City. When I moved into the city in 1979, that was kind of the height of the dive bar because the city was in terrible shape.
Right,
there was one place on the Bowery. You would go out and out about in the East Village where young people, you know, took their life into their hands as they went bar hopping because there were also drug dealers and gunfights and all that kind of stuff. But then you'd walk down the Bowery at about 4 a.m. to go down to Chinatown to have Chinese food after your night of drinking. And there was this one bar on the Bowery in between that had armored glass. They put like armored plexiglass over the bar, so there was only a slot that you could get your drinks on.
Wow.
And they would slide them under
I've
the slot.
I've seen that in liquor stores.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Where basically, the whole liquor store is behind.
This whole bar had been held up so many times. But the problem was this slot was pretty big, and if you had a hand with a gun, you could just stick it right under there.
Oh, my God.
They weren't thinking very well.
Sure, sure.
It was just funny.
There's different times. Banks don't even have
– Yeah.
You know, now, like, you go into a bank in New York, and it's
– Yeah. It's,
the tellers are no longer through, you know, behind bulletproof glass. So it's kind of amazing.
Everything was bulletproof back then.
For sure. The thing that you had to think about, can somebody stick a gun through this hole or not?
Yeah,
like, only shot glass.
It was really quite striking. I can't remember the name of that place. Lower Manhattan was full of them. Now there's only the Nancy Whiskey left, really.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, the earring sort of qualifies as a dive? Is that too old? Like,
I think it's
proto dive, too,
maybe. Yeah, it's got divey elements,
right?
But I think it's a little too established.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, it's a little fashionable,
and so like the White Horse may have been a dive.
Yeah,
but I think now it's no longer in the dive category.
I would agree with that.
I don't mean to tell people what is and what isn't.
It's a comfortable neighborhood bar,
right? But I think, you know, when Dylan Thomas drank there,
it was a dive.
It was,
yeah.
It's probably no longer one.
Yeah, not like
the
it
way
was.
There was.
No.
But that's, I think, also a fascinating thing about some of these bars is that, you know, in 1979, I think a lot of the dives had probably started life as something far different.
You know,
and that was...
They were much better bars.
They were real,
or
you know,
much more elegant
right,
places.
And the neighborhoods were different.
Yeah.
And by, you know, 79, when the whole city, you know...
it was in the toilet, basically.
Or, you know, it was a Ford says to New York, drop dead,
yeah.
you know. you know, and it really was almost dead that you had all of these bars that had started life as... I don't know what, you know, like, you know, middle class, upper class, you know, just nice neighborhood bars had sort of crumbled and become, you know, the last resort.
Yeah, they'd slid down into, you know, this sort of twilight life of diviness where it's always 4 a.m, even at 4 p.m.
Right. That's that beautiful, you know. The liquid haze of the dive bar. And then, you know, as we see, some of these neighborhoods have, again, changed. And you get, you know,
they're coming back in the other direction.
And, you know, the lights are turned up and, you know, they're cleaned up and the bar is, you know.
Well, I think of Long Island Bar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which when I ate there and when it was a bar and grill in the 80s, that was divey as hell.
Well, that right on, it's right off of Atlantic.
Yeah.
And our friend Toby Cuccini, who.
Yeah.
Famously ran Passerby and may or may not have created the Cosmo, the modern Cosmo.
Yeah, certainly helped popularize
it. I was going to say, depending upon the day that you ask him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he, you know, after the Passerby closed, which was in the meatpacking, you know, before the meatpacking district was actually only a few blocks from where we sit and record our podcast, he then decamped to Brooklyn and opened up, I don't know, a couple of years ago.
It's been about 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
He told me this. I don't know if he told you the story, but that he had seen the bar for years and it had been, you know, closed up. It had never, you know, opened.
Yeah, never reopened it.
And it was two sisters, I think, who owned Long Island Bar, and they closed it, and he kept slipping notes under the door. And, you know, he kind of dreamt he lived around the corner, and, you know, he always thought, okay, like, this would be a great place to take over. Yeah. And then finally he met one of their nephews, I think, who was able to convince, like, his aunt. They reopened, I don't know, 5 years ago.
And the beautiful thing they did is they kept the place. They didn't change it.
No.
They renovated it.
Yeah.
You know, they fixed what
they had to.
Exactly.
And then, like, cleaned it.
Yeah,
and
they left all the cigarette burns in the bar and stuff. And, you know, that's the best way forward for a lot of these dives is to get maybe a little loving facelift.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the same society in them because the parts of downtowns where the dives are all closing, they're also closing because their customers have been driven away. But what you can do is at least keep some of the feel of it and get some of the more interesting people who have moved in, who are maybe a little more sensitive to history. Yeah.
What I love about that bar is Toby once showed me their liquor storage room. Have you ever seen it? I'm not sure I could.
It's I couldn't fit in there.
I mean, I could barely fit in. It's like
all their bartenders are skinny.
Yeah, and tall, like Toby. Thank God, because they are where they keep all of the liquor bottles. Is this tiny, very long room right behind the bar. It's, I guess, the wall of the bar is the wall of this giant closet that runs the whole length of almost the bar.
Yeah, and it's about 2 feet wide.
And there's just racks from floor to ceiling with bottles. And that's how, I guess, they always did it. And
that's
they continue
they
to do it.
It.
And thankfully, Toby is tall and thin and can fit in there and has long arms. But I could not work in that.
No.
That's not for me.
I'd have to pay neighborhood kids to go and get the ride.
One of those giant sticks with, you know, a claw at the end. I think we'll see more of that, where these bars, formerly dives, are, you know, basically,
if we're lucky,
you know, kind of cleaned up, and maybe they repair the linoleum with linoleum.
And they're charging a little more for the drinks.
Right,
and,
exactly. I mean, we run the risk of, like, turning them into a little bit of, you know, sort of fetishization of, like, the
dive, or it becomes
like, you know, a mockery of.
I think what makes Toby's bar work is that he hired bartenders who are a little more dive bar-y.
Yeah.
You know, they're not technicians.
And he's got an old
characters.
Soul, and he's, and he can be crotchety as hell. So
he's hired bartenders who are fine with that.
And I think crotchetiness is like an essential part of the dive bar experience.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want that the barkeep not to be, you know, always happy in that.
No.
And there's always the risk that you're going to run, you may provoke their ire with an order or behavior. And
you have, I mean, the thing about dives is it's all about, like, unwritten rules of behavior.
Exactly.
And that's like you check your bullshit when you come in at the door. You can't throw your weight around.
Right.
You can't bully the bartender. You can't bully the house.
And I would say have limit what you think you're going to drink, right?
Like, exactly.
Like, limit your expectations for drinks. Like,
be happy with basic drinks.
Right. You're not going to go in and that's not the place to, like, order a Vue Carré.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, I've always heard about this aviation. Like, do you have, you know, like, no, that's not. I mean, Toby is a little bit different because he could do it, but.
And his bartenders can actually make any drink known
but
to
like,
mankind.
But for most dives, I think the idea is that, you know, you want a shot, you want a beer, you may not even want draft beer, you may want a pint or a
can. It depends on the place. Yes, that is right.
Use their glassware.
You might not. You might want to drink beer out of the bottle.
Right.
Or then again, you know, there's
open it with your own, you know, church key. So,
I saw somebody I knew do a baller move once. I knew he was dive bar people. This was at O'Connor's, which was not notably well maintained in Brooklyn. And he got some peanuts, a sack of peanuts from behind the bar, and spilled them out on the table in the booth and ate them off the table. And I was like, wow. You, sir, are living dangerously.
Exactly.
You, sir, are dive bar people. You know? That's like, that was okay.
Yeah, that is.
That was strong.
Yeah. Well, the Village Idiot, which is no longer with us, which I think is a very good thing that it's no longer open, was on the corner of
that place,
14th and what, like Hudson or
that's where,
like,
Good Behavior went to die.
Yeah, it was really, it could be, Max Wattman wrote a story for us. Yeah. about the allure of bars on Christmas Eve and tells, you know, an amazing, almost Paul Auster-like story that unfolds. I won't ruin it for you, but I would suggest go back, look for it. But that takes place at the Village Inn. And it was one of these things where, you know, you could either be, you know, jumped and trampled there, or you could have the most fantastic night of your life and, you know, meet your spouse there.
Oh, I mean, great dives, like the craziest stuff happens.
Oh, yeah.
Even in the early 80s, I was in a dive out on Long Island, and this guy sitting next to me, I get to talking to him, and he says, "You have an interest in buying this?" And he opens up his duffel bag that was on the floor between us, and inside was a U.S. Army M79 grenade launcher and about four or five, like, shells for it.
Cool.
And it's like, you know, "And where'd you get that?" "Well, you know, I was in the National Guard, I need the money." And he wanted $300 for it, and I unfortunately didn't have $300 bucks,
right?
Because it was damn tempting, I gotta say.
Sure. You know, dive bar also shit up. Serves as a pawn shop.
There's always some, you know, shady activity.
Quick loan
is known to happen in dives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that,
as long as it's not disturbing anyone, it's okay.
Yeah. I might have switched seats after realizing.
Yeah. I stopped drinking with him and went home.
I don't want to step on that bag, kick it back.
Well, yeah. And also, I think he was probably, if he's offering, I was like probably 20. If he's offering a random 20 year old this thing that he just met in a bar, he's going to get arrested really soon.
I don't know about you, Dave, but our conversation has made me suddenly crave a drink at a dive bar. I'm sure we can still find one around here somewhere. You know,
also maybe to like go and blow things up. But
I will say peanuts and beer and maybe some shots.
All right, I'll settle for that kind of shot.
We won't be doing any rocket launching today. No. I hope, but if we survive this, our next dive bar encounter, we'll be here back with another episode of Life Behind Bars.
I'm looking forward to it as always.
Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.